Welcome to the Deep Dive Spirituality Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Brian Russell, and today is going to be the third in a series of episodes that I've been doing on lessons from coaching pastors and spiritual leaders. And this episode is entitled Key Growth Steps for Pastors and Spiritual Leaders. We're going to do a deep dive into some of the things that I've learned, mostly about myself ultimately, and then how I've seen both students in my seminary classroom thrive and flourish, as well as the many pastors that I have the privilege of being friends with, and also many of the pastors that I have the privilege of serving as their coach during this season of their life in ministry. Now, I sort of backed my way into coaching. You can go back and listen to two episodes ago. A lot of it came from my own desire to rebuild, regrow, retool, and not even desire. It was a necessity, right? It's like I shared that quote that I like so much. There's no greater motivation than no other option. But what I've learned, and this is especially true over the last 4 or 5 years, is that the ministry, I don't know if it's ever been harder to be a pastor. Again, I don't want to make that an absolute statement, but in comparison to the past decades, I think there's some extraordinary events and challenges. It's trickier navigating marriages as pastors, and that's true for both male and female pastors. It's different dynamic than it was in the past. I think the demands in the modern world, social media, the way that denominations measure success, the sense of competition that sometimes takes place, which is ultimately unhealthy between pastors and even other churches, has made things more complicated. The COVID-19 and its repercussions, where so many people are isolated, has made it harder. And then also just the denominational infighting that, again, I'm most familiar with the people called Methodists, the various Methodist denomination, but this isn't a new thing either. Lots of denominations have had significant hemorrhages and challenges, and all of that, let alone the responsibility, even though it's a privilege to serve a local church, makes being a pastor difficult. Now, I first noticed the challenge just within my seminary classrooms. We mostly teach hybrid classes where students come in for, what it's turned into is basically 2.5 day immersions. What I began to notice in my students, and I saw this maybe even 8, 9 years ago, where more and more the students who were coming into my classroom were exhausted upon arrival. And they were literally trying to shoehorn classes on top of their already busy schedule of juggling family and church responsibilities, worried about finances, all of those things. And so I figured out that if I was going to be an effective teacher, I had to serve and bless my students with personal growth insights about setting up a rule of life that was sustainable. A lot of times Christians, especially pastors, will come up with this really complicated set of things that I think I should be doing for my spiritual health, and then you can't do it because it's too much, and then you feel guilty about doing the things that you think you should be doing, and you get this vicious cycle that just leads to the exhaustion, overwork. Beyond even the classroom, you can see there's been statistics of many, many, many pastors dropping out of the ministry. Okay. Now, I began listening because I'm just super curious, because I had seen my own life basically beginning to rebound, and I had come through an incredibly stressful personal crisis where I basically, you can go back and listen to other episodes where I talk about it, but I had basically hemorrhaged in almost every part of my life, but I found ways to tap in to what I really needed, which was grace, that allowed me to sustain and begin to navigate my way out. I learned mindsets. I learned spiritual practices that built new spiritual muscles, and so on and so forth. And so I started teaching my students this. And then over time, as I shared a couple episodes ago, that grew into a coaching practice. But here's some of the kind of things that some, I would almost call these secrets that pastors, ministers sometimes carry. And I have to say, I resonate with many of these things myself. You know, sometimes ministry can feel more like a burden or a cross to bear than a joy-filled calling. Ministry can sometimes feel like more of a burden than a joy-filled calling. You know, that's a little secret that sometimes it's hard for us as pastors to admit. Sometimes, as a pastor, I can feel trapped by an all-consuming job description. And that makes me sometimes feel like I'm losing my identity in Christ, the very thing I got into ministry for, which was to grow in love for God and neighbor and to bless other people. This all-consuming job description literally saps the joy out of the thing that I actually thought I was called to do. Sometimes I feel really lonely, and it's felt like I've had to keep a wall around myself just to protect myself. Again, most people are really nice and kind, but pastors take a lot of profoundly cheap shots, and every pastor has horror stories, if you can get into the inner circle, and just things that people have said about them or done. Again, sometimes we deserve it, let's say that, but a lot of times there's just cruelty that it's hard to handle at times. So then we put up walls around ourselves, which then make kind of a lonely job sometimes even lonelier. You know, sometimes, and you can listen to my whole episode on deconstruction and stuff, sometimes I've struggled in my faith profoundly with doubt, uncertainty, and fear. And who do you talk to if you're a pastor when you're struggling with doubt, uncertainty, and fear? Do you stand up in the pulpit and say that to everybody? Because people are literally, in some level, I mean, I'm going to be careful how I say this, but in some level, people pay the pastor to believe for them. Again, that shouldn't be true, but it is. And so the second a pastor has a challenge personally and they're hurting, a lot of times a lot of negativity comes towards them because people don't want to see that, which makes it hard. So what do you do? You know, sometimes, and I'm a professor of biblical studies, and I don't mind saying this, I wrote Astonished by the Word as kind of a response to a longer dry period in my own life. And sometimes Scripture just doesn't always seem fresh and life-giving like it once did. What do you do when that happens? Because I'm paid to interpret Scripture. Part of our job is to study the Word, be transformed by it, and then share that with others. But what happens when you hit dry periods? You know, sometimes I have a difficult time slowing down and actually taking a break. One of the first check-ins I do with pastors now is like, are you taking a Sabbath? I mean, do you have a day off? And I'm not even talking about a theological Sabbath as, you know, from a biblical perspective, but literally, do you have to take a day off? And I'm always stunned by how many pastors actually don't, or they go, oh, I take a half a day. You know, but everybody deserves to have one day where you get to wake up not having worked the previous day. But sometimes as pastors, we feel guilty about that because there's always more to do. You know, I feel sometimes, and again, this is on me, but I've felt that I've had to care for others before I got to take care of my own needs. And the church calls that sacrifice. Sometimes we get called, told that that's being like Jesus, sacrifice ourselves. But it gets tiring sometimes, doesn't it? I've worried how my ministry would affect the people who I love the most. Like, how does it affect my spouse, my children, my relationship with my parents, time with my friends? And then sometimes, you know, I found myself here multiple times. I've ended up exhausted by the demands of my calling and the fear that I'm on the edge of burnout, but I've always wanted to be faithful, right? Now, I phrased all those things as I statements on purpose, right? Because I want you to know that I know what that feels like, right? And I'm, you know, do I still identify with some of those statements at times? Yes, but I've learned a way of living that has addressed some of those core needs. And, you know, when I talk to pastors and we get into kind of unguarded moments, I often hear some of the very things that I wrote about myself, just basically spoken back aloud. So maybe you heard some of those things and resonated with those. But here's what I want to tell you. Ministry doesn't have to feel that way. It doesn't have to be that way. Again, are there hard seasons? Of course. There's winter, spring, summer, and fall, and that's the way the world is. But if it always feels like a winter, something's wrong, right? Because Jesus said, "Come unto me, all of you that are weary and heavy laden, and what? I will give you rest." That's in Matthew. And so what I've tried to do is I try to help others design a rhythm of life, a way of approaching ministry that allows you to have maximum effectiveness. Because those who know I'm all about mission. I'm all about making disciples. I'm committed to personal holiness and seeing literally a revival take place during our day. That's why I love pastors so much. It's like, you know, revival is going to bubble up out of the laity ultimately, but the laity needs a well-trained, sanctified, spirit-filled ministry that's committed to sharing the best stuff that the church has to equip others to be the hands, the feet, and the mouthpiece of Jesus. So let me talk about a couple of things that I've learned. First, the problem that we as pastors and spiritual leaders can get into, and I'm going to use a business language here, is that we function as owners. Instead of functioning as an owner, we function as an operator. Now, a pastor doesn't own the church, God does. But this is a metaphor from business, because a lot of times a small business owner, again, a mom, pop, they're the owner, but literally they have to be in the weeds all the time doing every single thing that has to be done to get the store to run. And unfortunately for many pastors, that's the mistake that we make. Or we're supposed to be the overseer, again, not bossing people around. We're supposed to be the servant of all, to equip the saints for the work of ministry. But what typically happens is, especially when we're starting out and we learn bad habits, pastors just become the operator. I know when I had my first church, I think I mowed the grass sometimes. I was painting things. Again, I was young, I had energy, but that took me away from the important thing, the one thing that God had called me to do. And so we have to work on understanding how to allocate our time, right? Because this isn't about not working, but it's about doing the things that God ultimately has called us to do, not to be the operator who has to be in the weeds of every single thing that happens in the church. Because what happens is when we get stuck in this hamster wheel of just busyness, meetings, planning, mowing the grass, changing the light bulb. I know pastors that fix stuff in the church. Again, they might be good at it, but that's not what we're supposed to be doing, right? I know churches that they expect their pastor to be up early to turn the lights on and the furnace on. That's hilarious, right? That doesn't make you a servant, right? We're called to equip the saints for the work of ministry. And we're called to serve out of an identity, not out of a role. If you look at any pastor's job description, it's almost suffocating. Like it's, you know, I'm most familiar with the United Methodist Church Book of Discipline, and there's this whole, it's supposed to be a paragraph, but it's literally pages that list everything that the senior pastor is supposed to do. You know, it's literally everything. And we can slowly then, burnout comes when we identify with our role instead of identifying and ministering out of our true identity as persons loved by Jesus. And so my life becomes a list of things I should be doing. And unfortunately for pastors, that includes studying the Bible, praying. And so the things that are life-giving become things that we should be doing. And that slowly causes us to rust out. And when I say rust out, I'm thinking of my days when I grew up in the north where it snowed and there were salt on the roads and literally cars I think they fixed this now. They have different coatings they put underneath cars. But in the old days, chassis under cars would literally just rust over the years. And every once in a while, they just collapse. That's a rust out. But how many of us in our spiritual lives just slowly rust out because we do our ministry out of our role, not our identity? Let me just give you a quick tip here right now. If you want to thrive and flourish in ministry, this is one of the things I've learned from coaching. There's a really simple practice, right? There's always stuff that has to be done. But focus on these two questions. Number one, you know, and I'll put this on the rubric of commit to your core practice and your one thing. Just ask yourself, what does my soul really need? Right now in this season, what's the spiritual practice? What's the means of grace that if I avail myself to that and open myself up, it's going to fuel my soul to give me the spiritual strength and the muscles that I need to serve and bless others? You know, you ask me what's that for me? It's really simple. It's centering prayer. Right. Again, I have other things I do. I read scripture. I pray. But if you're asking me what the key practice is, I would say it's centering prayer in my journaling, in my continual engagement with scripture. That's the practices that for me are literally non-negotiable. And if you're struggling right now in your ministry, the first thing I would say, do make sure you take a Sabbath. Number two, double down on whatever your spiritual practice is that fuels your soul. Make it a non-negotiable. That'll change your life. And then do the second thing. And this is what I mean by the one thing, right? Pastors, again, we have this just amazingly complicated job description where a lot, depending on your church, you're expected to do everything. What's your one thing, right? And what's the one thing? What's the thing that God's uniquely gifted you to do? It's the song that God made you to sing. What is it? And if you find that one thing, here's what it's going to look like. It's that one thing that you could spend even 15 minutes a day doing it. And as long as you got to do that thing, you could do everything else that's under your level of responsibility and you would be happy. You know, like for me, what's my one thing? It's content creation. It's study. It's writing, right? So like, for example, when I was a dean at Asbury Seminary, I'm not gifted for administration. I did it out of service. I did it because I wanted to help the Orlando campus stay open. I did it because I was able to be entrepreneurial, but administration is not my gift. And so basically I would sit all day in meetings and talk about brain frying and even frustrating at a profound level. But here's how I figured out what I did. I got in, I'd always go to my office early and I did centering prayer. I did my 20-minute sit in my office, and then I would spend 30 to 60 minutes every morning writing. And if I did that, I could spend the next 8 hours in meetings, and it was still a great day for me. That's what I mean by the one thing. So what's that one thing? What's the spiritual practice that you need to commit to? And what's the one thing that if you did it a little bit every day, or if it takes a little bit more time, maybe it's a thing you can do a couple of times a week that can make everything else you'd have to do as a pastor, it just gives it a whole new spin. Find your one thing. A couple more ideas. This isn't going to be a long episode. Another thing that I've learned is metrics. Sometimes we pastors were our worst enemy because we play comparison games with other churches, and denominations don't help us. They want us to report on things like baptisms, how many professions of faith, what our attendance is. And so literally, instead of having a worship service and looking out there, you're counting like, oh my gosh, there's only X number of people here, or counting the offering. And again, those things have some importance, right? But here's the truth, right? A lot of that has no reflection whatsoever on the pastor. It has to do with the context where the church is located. It has to do with who was the pastor before you. It has to do with a lot of things that really aren't in your control. And those aren't the right metrics, right? Yeah, of course, every church wants to have lots of baptisms and professions of faith. But what if you're in a season where, like, the big employer in that area just moved out and everybody got laid off and had to move? I mean, your church is going to take a huge drop. Or like a COVID happens. That challenge, that wasn't anybody's fault, right? So here's the thing. those are what we call lag metrics. You have to put systems in place. Like if you want to grow your church, any church can grow. Okay. Assuming there's people around. Okay. But you have to measure not that, because basically those are lag metrics it could be 10 years before you see those numbers change. You have to learn how to measure lead metrics. Like if you want people to show up, how is your church engaging the community, right? I mean, you have to figure out not to measure not the end result. You need to learn how to measure the little things that add up over time that give you the result. That's one of the things I work with in coaching. It's like one of the things I love to do is have a pastor. It's like, okay, you write your own job description, and what do you want to be evaluated on? What's the fair way to evaluate your ministry? Not these external things where it's out of your control. Like if you want your church to grow, what are the things that you can measure yourself on over the next year or 3 years, that if you do these things, you may end up with a growing church? You know, like one of the easy things is this. If you want a growing church, start discipling a small group of people. Spend several years working with, say, 3 to 5 men and women in a small group. Teach them how to share their faith, how to do evangelism, how to do spiritual formation for themselves. And they're going to become the people then that replicate that. And it's a slow game. So it's critical for pastors. What I've learned is to set up the right metrics. So if you want to get a great score at the end of the game, how do you win the first quarter, the second quarter, the third quarter, the fourth quarter? All right, makes sense. Again, I can say more, but that's something I've learned. And the last thing I want to just touch on would be what I call having the wrong blueprint for ministry. You know what I've discovered in my own growth is I'm oftentimes my own worst enemy, right? And oftentimes we have these sort of hidden mindsets, or we even have these covert contracts that we run. What do I mean by a covert contract? A lot of pastors run on this. If I just work really hard and am nice to everybody, everybody should like me. If I'm sacrificial in how I live, when something goes south in my life, the church should be understanding, right? But notice what there is there. There's an unspoken expectation of a quid pro quo relationship with our congregations. We have these covert contracts that I don't have to state my needs. And matter of fact, my needs don't matter. But if I just meet everybody else's needs, my needs are going to get met. Friends, that sets you absolutely up for burnout and disappointment. I don't know how many pastors I've heard just these horror stories. Like they were voted out. I had a friend that literally, while he was gone for a couple days, he comes back and the church decided the associate pastor was going to be the pastor and basically fired the person kind of covertly, right? And then they're like, hey, I did all this stuff. That's a covert contract, right? Other blueprints. I've heard pastors say things like, you know, everybody should like me. Now, what if literally your criteria for fulfillment was that every single person liked you? You know, what I've learned as I've gotten older is I've tried to cultivate, and this will sound kind of bad, but I just mean this. I've tried to cultivate a courage to be disliked. Now, I don't want to be disliked by people. I want to be loved. But you know what? Not everybody likes me. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I mean, some of the videos I like the most, they get dislikes, and YouTube doesn't show dislikes anymore, but it's really funny. I could see them and I'm always like, geez, what did I do? But it's okay, right? I'm not everybody's cup of tea. The most honest statement you can make, it's always 20% of the people aren't going to like something that you say. And as pastors, we have to be okay with that, because we're representing God ultimately. And we have to be true, and we need to be able to look ourselves in the mirror and live according to the values and the calling that God has for us. So it's not everybody should like me. It's like that just isn't going to happen. I heard a pastor once, it was really struggling as an associate pastor, And he literally, I was coaching him, and he just kind of slipped and said one time, he goes, you know, real men should have their own churches. And, you know, I almost busted out laughing. I'm like, do you know what you just said? He goes, no. I said, you just said real men should have their own churches. And I said, so what the heck does your masculinity have to do with whether or not you're a senior pastor or not? And then he laughed. And I said, now think about this. You literally, deep down on the inside, think that you're less of a man, let alone less of a pastor, simply because in this season, you're second chair. You know, as soon as you realize, geez, I'm setting a rule up that's just going to create unhappiness for me, he was able to enjoy his ministry, and he was able to actually thrive and flourish as that associate because he was doing a great job anyway. And then guess what? Eventually, you know, most associates, if they're really called to be a senior pastor, you get become a senior pastor, right? So what you want to notice is this, and this would be the last thing I want to talk about, and I've learned it from coaching. You know, what are your rules? I mean, what are your real rules? Sit down with a piece of paper. And like, what has to be true for me to be satisfied as a pastor? You know, how much money do you have to make? How many people have to show up for you to feel satisfied? How much external praise do you need? Again, I'm not saying these things are good or bad, right? We'll let you judge those things, but get it down on paper what your rules really are. Let me give you an example of a rule. For a long time, as I was coming out of my divorce and I was a single father, and even after I got remarried, I was still struggling as a parent. I was thinking, like, I'm not a good parent. I'm not a good father. And everybody always said, Brian, you're a great dad. And my wife would say, geez, you're such a great dad to your girls. But deep down, I didn't feel like it. And then I heard about this rule stuff, and I just asked myself, you know, what has to be true for me to feel really good as a dad? And listen to what my rules were. I would always be present for my daughters, and I would work really hard and provide for them. And then I like, those are sort of mutually exclusive. How can you always be present and still work really hard and be a provider? And then I realized, oh my gosh, you know what my rules were? I was trying to be my mom, who didn't work outside the house. And I was trying to be my dad, who always worked multiple jobs when we were growing up. And I was trying to do that at the same time. And guess what? I felt like I was a bad father because it's impossible to be two persons at the same time. Those were my rules. So friends, what are your rules? It's one of my favorite coaching conversations. Be 100% off. It's what has to be true for you to feel loved. What has to be true for you to feel the grace of God? What has to be true for you to feel satisfied and thriving as a pastor? And I could go on. I just wanted to give a taste. These are some of the things I've learned about pastors. I started out with some of the secrets, gave a couple of the metaphors that I think are really helpful for pastors and spiritual leaders to grab a hold of, you know, and one of the key ones, the last one I'll say is just, it's a long game. We want to live for the marathon. There's no finish line to what we're doing. We're growing in love for God and neighbor. You can only know how far you've gotten by looking backwards, not by looking how far you still have to go, because growth and love is an eternal thing. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. I'd love to have a conversation with you. You can check out my materials at brianrussellphd.com. I'll have some things in the show notes if you want to check out some of the links there. I'd really appreciate it. Again, I'm here to serve. If you're a pastor, just know I pray for pastors every week. I know what it's like. Grateful that you're there, and I want you to thrive and flourish in your ministry. Preach the gospel, live it out. Till next time, live by faith, be known by love, and be a voice of hope to others.